Welcome to Under the Radar, a show about independent iOS app development. I'm Marco Arment.
And I'm David Smith. Under the Radar is usually not longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
It is the season now. Now we're really in it.
Yeah. It is the week before WWDC as we're recording, and probably as you are listening to this, we are in that very fun period of time when it is like the exciting announcements, the interesting announcements, deciding and discovering what is going to happen for the next like 3 months of our life is going to look like is on the very near horizon. And it is both exciting and terrifying and it's like uncertain in a variety of ways all at the same time, which is a fun time of year. I enjoy this feeling of the week before WWDC.
Yeah, I always like, you know, we've talked in the past about kind of the Apple seasonality, you know, from kind of spring up to this point. This is a time to get projects done, like pay off technical debt, maybe do some like, you know, architecture work. I did some of that.
Sure.
So I feel, you know, decent about that. But I never get done as much as I want to get done before WWDC. And then it all just kind of happens to me. And then it's like, well, here's a bunch of, you know, kind of pie in the sky feature ideas that I'm going to have to put those on the back burner for a while. I have a whole bunch of, you know, podcasts that I was going to listen to before the keynote barrier. And it's like, you know, once the keynote happens, like then all these podcasts that were about what we think might happen at the keynote become irrelevant. And I got, you know, yeah. It's like there's all these like, you know, this is like a barrier, like a huge threshold that you cross pre-keynote and post-keynote. And, you know, like you, I think I expect this to be a pretty busy summer. You know, so, you know, the big thing is the very, very strong rumors at this point of OS redesigns across the board. That's going to be a lot. If that is true, and there sure is a lot of smoke for that fire, that's going to be a lot of work for all of us. And it's probably going to be really exciting. You know, when Apple does a redesign, it always creates tons of work. You know, and this doesn't happen that often, but, you know, in the few examples we have, it creates tons of work for the platforms. It can be really exciting for users and for developers to have like, oh, now our apps can adopt this new cool look. And it often prompts like a redesign across the whole app or a rewrite of the whole app. So there's a lot of like disruption, a lot of excitement. It usually overall works out well in the long run. But in the meantime, there's a lot of work to do. So that is, I think, what we are about to face. And so it's going to be an interesting summer.
Yeah, no, and I think in to that degree or that I expect it is going to be a particularly busy summer. Like I've made extra care to try and be ready for that in terms of, yeah, like you were saying, in terms of tidying up loose ends, like not undertaking big changes. Like I had a whole redesign and re-architecture that I was working on for Andromeda++ that I like put on hold because it makes a lot more sense to tackle that next week than it does in the last few weeks. And also just like personally and physically, like I took all of last week off and went on a lovely long hike, and it was intentionally done. Like this is something I've done a few times now where I find it super helpful the week before WWDC to go and just take a holiday, because I know the summer is going to be busy. It's going to be difficult to have that time off. And it's just good from a mental reset. Like I found it was super helpful even just to like realign my brain in terms of why I do what I do. You know, I love making apps. This is fun. And there's a lot going on in our community that's really complicated and has difficult feelings. But like, I love the job I have and I want to keep doing it and I want to do it well. And it was helpful to have some space. And so I suppose this, you know, it's not necessarily very helpful to give you anyone the advice to take last week off. Because if you
go back in time,
you know, it's like the planting a tree, right? The best time was 10 years ago. The next best time is today. So it's like maybe if you're hearing this and you have a few days to rest up, but more, I think, understand and preparing yourself that it might be a very busy summer. It may be something that's very challenging in a good, fun, interesting way, but just something to keep in mind as you're making summer plans, because having been through these kinds of summers, it can be it is some of my favorite experiences I've ever had have been the summer that is really busy. I really enjoy that. Like that is not something that I am worried about or sad about. If it's like, oh man, there's a lot of work. It's like, I love this work. This is what I enjoy. And especially if I don't expect it to be necessarily, you know, there may be a summer of busy work would not be very fun, but I don't expect a lot of busy work. I expect this will be the interesting stuff that I really enjoy. Like, you can look at it two ways with some, like, a big redesign, that it can be, you know, it can, you end up in some ways in the same place as you were before. It's like, or you can look at it as the opportunity to go through my app in a thoughtful, holistic way, understand, like, a lot of the features and pages that are built subsequent to the first time it was written, you know, were kind of added on and potentially bolted on in ways that don't feel holistic and of a piece. And so, like, it's great and exciting. And, like, I'm excited that I took, you know, or glad that I took the time off so that I feel ready and rested and excited to, like, get started on that. And I hope it's busy in some ways. I hope I don't, you know, come out Monday morning from the keynote and be like, huh, that's it? Like, that would be really disappointing to me, yeah, at this point, because I'm, like, I'm pretty hyped in terms of looking forward to some good, interesting work this summer.
We don't know yet, like, you know, to what degree of a redesign will this be, and what other, obviously, like, the redesign is not going to be the only thing they announce. But, you know, I think that's going to be the thing that affects all of us. You know, like, you know, every year they, you know, announce here's some new APIs or some new capabilities. And a lot of times it's like, well, that's great if I ran, like, you know, a ride sharing app or something. But sure, because my app is not that type of app, or, like, it's hard sometimes to find a use for, you know, for every app to adopt things every WWDC of any meaningful size. A redesign year affects everyone, every single app. Like, if you don't adopt the redesign, your app instantly looks old, and you will start losing customers, and your one-star reviews will increase over time from September forward. Actually, I mean, thank God it's no longer from June forward, since people can't leave reviews anymore on beta OSs, but it used to be bad. But, you know, if you don't adopt it, your app basically looks abandoned, and customers will eventually, you know, react poorly to that. So you kind of have to adopt it. So then the question becomes, how do you adopt it? And one way, like, you know, we saw with iOS 7, that was obviously the biggest example of, like, a sweeping redesign. One way to adopt a redesign is basically hit build and run with the new SDK and basically change nothing else. Like, just adopt all the new UI, hope that the metrics and behaviors are the same enough that it doesn't break your UI. Maybe go through and do a pass through the app and, you know, tweak things that are broken with the new metrics or whatever. But then that's it. Like, that's one way to do it. And that works for most apps if your goal is, like, more functional. But the better approach that we saw, like, back with iOS 7 is, like, most apps, that kind of triggered a full redesign of the app to happen, like, over the following year. And, you know, oftentimes a full rewrite of the app if it was, you know, based on old technology or they wanted to pay down tech debt or just do things differently. And a redesign also, like, it isn't just, you know, the way Apple does redesigns, it's usually not just a reskin. It's actually, like, new interaction paradigms often, or like, new navigation hierarchies, you know, new types of widgets and types of gestures that become, you know, common in the system or expected to work a certain way. So you get a lot of, like, surface area that, like, potential for a rewrite or potential for a sweeping redesign. So that's probably what's going to happen here. And that I'm very excited about that. It does scare me on a number of fronts. It is a huge amount of work for everyone, including Apple. So what I expect is for the first half of the summer to be really buggy. Like, I think it's going to be, like, if this is actually a sweeping redesign across all of their platforms, it's going to be a mess during the early betas. Of course, it has to be. Like, that's a huge thing to tackle. So they're going to be a mess. We're going to be a mess. And if they actually did it across all of their platforms, which the rumors seem to suggest, that's going to also create a lot of friction on the platforms that have less resources typically assigned to them. So things like, you know, the Mac, tvOS, watchOS, like visionOS. I like, you know, we're going to see, like, the kind of, like, the non, like, you know, hot platforms or the ones that tend to get less developer attention from Apple. It might be a hard time on some of those platforms for a while because you're asking everyone on these platforms, including Apple, to, like, adopt a new system design that takes a lot of resources. So anything that doesn't have a lot of resources, it's going to feel strained. So it's going to be a very busy time. But again, I think when you look at, like, the the potential here. The potential is exciting. And we might end up in a very good place in the fall and winter and spring, but it's going to be a lot of work to get there.
Yeah, and I think it is going to be such a funny summer to decide about, like, when you install betas and where you install betas.
Oh, I'm going day one.
Yeah, like, I mean, I will have to wait and see. But
Don't do this, everybody.
But it's the thing that's hard about this year. It's like, if it's a substantial, fundamental rethinking or dramatic thing, like, the bigger the change in many ways, the more important it is to really understand that as soon as you can. And so there's going to be a tension and a temptation to go ahead and install the beta on your main phone right away. I wouldn't recommend that. I think my recommendation is going to be, I will have it, you know, I'm heading out to California in a couple of days. I have a testing watch, a testing phone that I'm taking for the sole purpose of them being my, like, early testing devices. My phone has a cell plan on it, so I can use it to some degree as my main phone. It'll have the wrong number, obviously, but I can use it in a more holistic way rather than just it being feeling like an iPod Touch. You know, it can actually be a phone, and I want to try and use that a little bit, do some of my phone use on it. But I think it is going to be a summer where you're going to want to understand how it feels in practice beyond just looking at it in the simulator. And so I think having testing devices in general is just something to, think about and use as much as you can this summer, because I think that is going to be useful. But yes, I think the temptation to be on my main phone much sooner is going to be much higher. And I think that is in some ways reasonable, because the nature of these things is you have to live with them to understand them. And so it's a little scary. It's a little be careful out there. I think especially if you are traveling to California, do not install a beta OS on your primary device while you are away from your home.
Yeah, that's
a bad something
idea.
That I have done that. It is not wise. I've seen people who have done that. It is not wise. It usually ends in tears and problems when you then try and do something that is important while you are away from home and you cannot do it, or your phone is just continuously running out of battery, or who knows what. Like, don't do that. You get a testing device if you're going to California. If you're at home, maybe you can, but generally, be careful out there. Though it does make me think a little bit about, for testing device purposes, like, how important do you think it's going to be to have a testing device that can run Apple Intelligence on it?
We will get to that in a minute. First, we are brought to you by Sentry this episode. All right, founders, time to be honest. How much time is your team wasting on debugging? If you're like most startups, it's way too much. Your team should be focused on shipping features, not chasing down bugs. That is where Sentry comes in. It's a real-time error monitoring and tracing platform, so you know exactly when something breaks, where it happened, and why. So there's no more 1 a.m. Slack threads or digging through endless logs trying to solve it yourself. Now, here's the game changer. Seer, Sentry's new AI debugging agent. It's like hiring an engineer who already knows your entire code base. Seer finds the true root cause 94% of the time and can even generate merge-ready pull requests, plus optional tests to prevent regressions. So you ship faster, your team isn't drowning in bug alerts, and instead of grinding through logs, your developers get back to building the product. The good news is, new users get 3 months free of the team plan, which covers 150,000 errors. That's quite a lot. Click the link in the show notes or go to sentry.io and use the code RADAR. That's Sentry, Sentry.io. Use the code RADAR or click the link in our show notes. Our thanks to Sentry for their support of this show and Relay. All right, so Apple Intelligence compatibility for test devices. That's a very good question. My strategy for test devices will allow for this no matter what, in part because my current test phone is last year's iPhone 16 or 15, whatever it is, Pro.
Sure.
So it has anyway. But what I'm going to do this year, normally my test strategy is I bring like some, few years old iPhone, sometimes either one of my old phones or something I got cheap off of Amazon, like refurb, which is, again, it's a great option. I mentioned it in the past, like Amazon refurbished and recertified and renewed, whatever, their different terms for refurbishing. Those devices can be hundreds of dollars less than new ones. And for testing purposes, I've never had a problem with them. I would just say throw away the weird no-name charger and USB cable they come with, because you can't trust those. But the devices are fine. Anyway, so my strategy this year, though, is I'm going to go beta 1, unless there's some kind of like unforeseen reason why I can't, but I'm going to go beta 1 on my main devices, and I'm going to, you know, over the next few days, I'm going to make a backup of my current main devices onto my test devices. So my test devices will become the outgoing versions for stability over the summer if I need them. But I'm going to use my main devices as my beta devices. And so if you only have one device, like your current phone, capable of running Apple Intelligence, you can do the same strategy if you want. The only thing is, like, you have to weigh the risk of, like, well, if you do have to go back to, like, if you have to, like, you know, start using your test phone as your main phone because your previous main phone is running a beta and is ruined, you know, you have to kind of figure, like, how do you do that? You know, is the risk worth it to you? You know, as you said, Dave, I would not recommend people do this while traveling, especially internationally. That's a terrible idea for so many reasons. But overall, I think so. The question, though, of like, what do we think Apple Intelligence needs will be for the betas and for our needs? All the rumors also are suggesting that we are finally after 1 year, but, you know, we are getting APIs to use the on-device models in various ways. I, first of all, am very, very glad to hear that. I hope that comes true. And I hope that there are lots of capabilities that we are able to use without any needless restrictions. So hopefully, you know, obviously these models are going to be, you know, resource intensive to use locally. And so I'm sure there will be some restrictions on, like, maybe you can't, you know, use them in the background while the phone's on battery or, you know, stuff like that. Like, I'm sure there will be limits. But hopefully those limits are as light touch as they can be. Because I really think that many apps will probably find utility in at least some of the LLM and AI-based APIs locally on the phone. So even simple stuff, like, you know, so many apps have, like, a list of things that you then drill into with detail pages. Well, if you can call the on-device summarization APIs, maybe you can do, like, kind of what Apple Mail does, and you can have, like, you know, the little description line of text on the table view or on the list of what you're going into. That can be an AI summary of the thing you're going into. Like, there's going to be, I think, little things like that that are going to become fairly ubiquitous fairly quickly. So if there's that kind of utility in your app where you can think of, like, you know, think about what Apple's likely to unveil as an API for these AIs. It's going to be things like the writing tools. We already can kind of do that in the built-in widget. Maybe we can call it programmatically. Okay, that's something. It's going to be things like text summarization, probably. That's something. Maybe it'll be some kind of image synthesis. I don't know. That might be a little heavy, but maybe not. You know, maybe that'll be there. Maybe there. I'm hoping there'll be audio transcription. You know, there's already an API for that that's based on older tech. I'm hoping they upgrade it to the newer tech and fix some of the limitations there. I would love to have that. And for many apps, audio transcription could be a useful thing. So, like, think about in your app, like, where you can use even small, quote, AI features. And if there's any of those for your app, I mean, there's also things like recommendation algorithms. Like, if there's anything like that for your app that you think might be useful, even in small ways like text summarization and lists, I would suggest plan for an Apple Intelligence-capable test device for the betas, however you want to do that. Whether you want to do it my way of making your primary the beta and using a secondary as your backup, or going out there and buying an inexpensive or a less expensive Apple Intelligence compatible phone right now, maybe the iPhone 16e, you know, something like that. Like, there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah, and I think, like, my current plan is to look, depending on what's actually announced on Monday, it's like, if I need one, I think a M1 iPad Air is currently the cheapest device you could get that would support Apple Intelligence, because, like, a refurbed iPad Air M1 is a fairly old device at this point, and I think you could get it for a couple $100 probably, or $300, which would be the easiest way into that. I think we're just gonna have to see. Like, it's just an interesting dynamic, and I hope we don't get a bifurcation of Apple Intelligence again, where it's like, if you want Apple Intelligence 1, you could support those devices, but if you want Apple Intelligence 2, you need this new set of higher spec devices. That would be complicated and annoying, but I suppose at this point, like I said, I'm just waiting to see what's announced on Monday, see if there's any new restrictions, see if there's any opportunities that are specific and dramatic for Apple Intelligence, but it's just a new wrinkle that is interesting to have to walk through, because it is very tied to modern hardware in a way that you can usually get away with older hardware for a testing device, you know, just for iOS features that themselves. You know, I don't need my typical testing watch right now, or phone right now, is I think two generations behind the fastest one, and so like that's usually fine, but for Apple Intelligence reasons, that is a bit trickier in a weird way. But yeah, I'm trying to think of other things. Like, I think WWDC itself, we know how it's not even new anymore. Like, how the video based presentations will go. I think we have a sense of what WWDC itself, in terms of, you know, Monday, there's the small in person gathering at Apple Park, but otherwise, you know, from the vast majority of people, you're just going to be watching it online. Then the videos and things will become available. And I think the only thing I'd say is, I think a flow that I've gotten into with this new cycle is, I feel like Monday you're like drinking from the fire hose. There's just too much information to keep track of. And so most of what I'm doing is just writing down little notes to myself of like things to look at later. And later is, in this case, Tuesday, where Tuesday is the day that I go through the list of all the things that I bookmarked or wrote a note about to go and look at subsequent. Tuesday is sort of like for exploring those, understanding them, maybe playing around a little bit. And then I find Wednesday is when I start to really start prototyping and building stuff out. This is a little bit complicated by the lab schedule, in terms of if there are, this year there are these new things called group labs, which sort of sound a little bit like the thing they tried with Slack a few years ago, where it's but now it's in real time and kind of video based, but it's slightly unclear. But it seems like you can sign up for these like big WebEx sessions where you can submit questions and have them answered in a group setting, which in some ways is helpful, but you have to have the question to ask in order to do that. So if you are trying to work on something that you were going to a group lab that's earlier in the week, you may need to shift up your schedule in terms of the exploration and building part, because I think my best questions typically are coming from when I've actually tried to build something, and not like deeply integrating it into my app, much more, you know, file new project, try to build something, try to build out the simplest version of the idea that you have and see where the limitations are, see where the rough edges are. And then either in a group lab setting or in a one-on-one lab, you know, ask your questions, because I think that's going to be much more successful and productive if you've actually tried the API, you've explored it, you found the issues, you found where. Very often I find I have a situation where I've had an idea for a feature. I start trying to build it, and I find that my conceptualization of how the feature should work is running into issues or limitations within the API. So either I'm not using the API correctly, or there's a bug or issue with the API. And a lab is a great venue for having that discussion. But generally, that's sort of the flow that I do. And I will say, as I've said many times, the new video format is amazing and I love it. And I hope it's the same this year, where we just get lots of videos that are short and sweet and are easy to kind of jump around with. And I think I watch a ton of videos. I watch most of them very quickly, not trying to really understand and follow along everything in detail. Like, I'm skimming initially just to try and have a lot of surface area that I've been exposed to. And then again, I'm like, you know, adding a second level of things where I'll go back and rewatch at 1x, paying close attention, taking notes, like in a more detailed fashion. But early and initially, like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, those early days of the week, I'm just trying to gather as much as I can and try and understand as much as I can, so I can ask good questions when the labs are going on, and just so that I can be as prepared for it in that way. Because the reality is, as much as next week is a big week, the summer is a long time. I have a lot of time to do the actual work, but the thing that is rare and sparse is access to Apple engineers. And so I'm just trying to be as prepared as I can in the short term, rather than necessarily worrying about how this is actually going to, you know, be architected in practice. I just want to have as many good questions as I can as soon as I can.
Yeah, that's a good strategy, because, you know, in many ways, the timing of WWDC labs is weird and not ideal, because, like, you know, you get all this new stuff, but you can't, as you're saying, like, you kind of have to rush to see, like, am I going to have any issues or questions with this? You know, because you only have the labs for the few days after the keynote, after you get the beta one. And then, you know, in terms of like filing bugs that you want to be fixed, you know, you basically have a month or so. Like, you know, for the most part, like, if you, unless a bug is really, really bad, that, like, so bad that it would be like a showstopper, it's probably going to sail through if it persists through mid-July. So like you have basically 1 month to file bugs that have a chance of being fixed. So you kind of have to figure out really soon, like, what are those bugs? And you have to, you know, you have to also market your bugs. You know, as it's not a great situation, but it is the situation that we're in. Like, the best way to get bugs fixed is find them in the next 2 weeks, post them on social media with feedback numbers for Apple people, and spread the word as much as you can. And then when new betas come out, if they're not fixed yet, do it again. Post it, file it again, post it again, spread the word again. Like, that's how you get bugs fixed. And the best time to do that is this is the following month after this. So you only have a short time. So that's like, if you're going to do things like, you know, if some API that you use is now deprecated in the new OSs, and you need to go back and, like, you know, adopt some new changes to avoid these deprecation warnings, that's something better done, like, in July. Like, you can wait on that, because that is not, like, an urgent thing. What you need to do the first month is play with the new stuff and file bugs about the new stuff. That's, like, the immediate on-fire thing for all of us. It's kind of sucks that this is the way that you have to, you know, file your bugs in a very short span for them to be fixed. But that is the reality, and we can't change it. So that's what we got to do. So that, yeah, as you're right, like, this is a good time to, like, build fresh test things, like test harnesses, little test projects using the new APIs the way you expect to have to use them. See what works, see what doesn't, and file as many bugs as you are willing to and as you can in the ideal time to file them, because there is no other ideal time.
Yeah. And I think maybe a good place to wrap this up is also just to say it's going to be interesting. I think this year you're not going in person. I will be in Cupertino in person. But I was thinking about the actual connection part, like the way that we connect as a community, whether that be, you know, filing your bugs and shouting about them on social media or in person. And I will say that Apple has a really great site that I noticed where they have a bunch of community events, and many of them, in fact, most of them probably aren't in Cupertino. So don't feel like if you want to connect about WWDC, you're excited about it, you want to talk about it with like-minded people who are interested in this sort of thing, I would say don't feel like you had to be in Cupertino to do that. There are lots of events that seem to be all over the world that people are doing, you know, keynote watch parties and that sort of thing. And it's just a good opportunity to do that. I will say my annual warning, if you are coming out to Cupertino for the first time, it is forecast, I believe, to be extremely hot and sunny and warm and dry. And so be, you know, careful with yourself in that way. Sunscreen, water, a hat. Take care of yourself, because Monday at Apple Park can be really cool and special. Like, Apple Park is just a really fun place to be and to be in a group of people who care about the thing that you're excited about. And you just watch the keynote and you get to talk about it right that minute with other people who are interested in it, with some of the engineers who worked on it, who are often extremely excited and delighted to talk to you about it because they've been sequestered away for so long working on these features. So it can be really exciting, but, you know, take care of yourself. Don't you know, get heat stroke and overdo it. So it's, you know, find some shade, wear some sunscreen and drink plenty of water, and then just enjoy yourself. And I think whether that's you're going to Apple Park, whether you're at home, like, I don't know. I love this part of the year. I think it's really fun. I think it's exciting. It's been a really complicated year to get to here. You know, in terms of we've had some very difficult feelings that we've had to navigate through, and many of those are not resolved, but they nevertheless, like, there are some fundamental aspects to next week that are exciting, interesting, fun, and I look forward to it. And I think that's, you know, I'm glad that I was able to work myself and my feelings around to the place that I am. You know, I do have excitement, and it's a bit more clear-eyed perhaps this year, a little bit less, just sort of blind enthusiasm than I've maybe had in some years gone by. But I'm nevertheless enthusiastic and excited, and, you know, this is the part of the job I enjoy. I like making new stuff, and boy, do I expect there's going to be new stuff to make starting next week. So it's kind of like just a fun thing to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm, you know, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of complicated feelings and a lot of kind of ugliness in some of the stuff around the developer relationship right now. But this is a good time to enjoy the fun tech stuff. And we'll get back to that stuff as we need to over time. But this is now, like, we're about to get a whole bunch of new tech progress, APIs, redesign, hopefully, like, some, you know, nice, like, async and Swift UI stuff. And, you know, that'll all make our lives great for the next year. And we'll at least certainly be busy.
I think so.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll talk to you on the other side of the barrier in 2 weeks.
Bye.